if you put them into those kind of strategic buckets and you challenge yourself on, you know, what is true now and where do we want to be and what would have to be true to get us there. And then layer in what matters to employees, like spend the time, ask people, why did you join? Why do you stay? Why would you leave? And make sure your programs fit that. That's where it's magic.
Hello and welcome back to our Unicorn Leaders Podcast. My name is Fahad Ahtab, CEO and founder of Unicorn Labs. And on this podcast is where we interview amazing VPs of talent, CEOs, and managers on how they create high-performing teams and high-performing cultures. And that was just Amanda Gordon, the Vice President of People at Rewind, talking about how to attract and hire stars and employees. And this is the goal of our podcast, is to give you the insights and tools so that you don't have to make some of the mistakes we've made and are able to actually succeed from where we're going. So this podcast is brought to you by Unicorn Labs, and you can check us out at unicornlabs.ca, where you'll learn a little bit about our leadership development programs for high growth tech startups and their managers and their executives. I was really excited to share some insights with Amanda Gordon to talk about the employee experience journey. I think this journey is so important and so undervalued. We often in startups will talk about our customer journey. And when we're trying to make product market fit and trying to understand exactly how our product has to be positioned in the market and what our customers experience with it, what their pain points are, we get really good at customer insight and customer journeys. And we've got to be able to create a phenomenal product that people actually want to buy and that solves pain. But why can't we do that same thing for employees? We've got to create not just a product market fit for our products. We've got to create that kind of talent market fit, that talent culture fit within our organizations. What is our employee experience? What are the pains they're facing? What are the challenges they have? And how are we positioning ourselves in the market to be able to attract the most phenomenal team players? To create a high-performing team, we need to set certain culture in place. We need to have psychological safety. We need to have empowerment. We need to have great communication. We have to have a vision. We have the culture of leadership, all of these different elements. But we've got to be able to get the right people. Because unless we have the right people on the bus, then we'll never figure out what seat on the bus they need to get beyond or where the bus is actually headed. And we can thank Jim Collins for that analogy there. We got to get the right people on the bus. So here are seven different steps I want to talk to you through about the employee experience journey. Seven different things that you need to take into account when designing your employee experience. The first one is attract talent. How do you attract top talent? Where are you posting? Where are you talking about your brand? Who do you have evangelizing your brand? Who do you have evangelizing your culture? You've got to be able to talk about employee experiences in such a way that people get excited, but also you can't just be the one talking about it. It's what other people say about what it is to work at your teams. And high-performing teams attract high performers. But you know what detracts high performers? Low-performing teams, and they will actually leave and they will not want to come. So the first bucket is attracting high performers. The second one is actually being able to hire them when they've been attracted, being able to actually pick the stars amongst all those that apply to your teams. How do you actually pick those stars? How do you identify the key skills? How do you identify the key innate tendencies? Then you got to onboard them. We got to be able to help them affirm that the decision they've made to join your company is the right decision. The decision they've made to be part of this team is something that's exciting. It's going to be a journey. That onboarding is so key and so important. Then once they're onboarded, once we've hired them, once you've attracted them, hired them, onboarded them, you start to engage them. You build their strengths and you give them purpose. And from a strength-based perspective, you put them into a role and you continually adapt the role where they are working their best, their values are aligned, and their strengths are aligned. Then we help them push performance. And that's where we get into some coaching, where we help drive expectations. We make expectations clear and we look for growth paths. That growth path leads up to development. Development is all about coaching and career growth, how they can grow within your company, not just vertically, but kind of like a matrix, going to different roles, different positions, not always necessarily growing into management, but growing into more experienced individual contributor roles. And lastly, when they depart from your team, how to have a positive exit experience where they continue to talk about the experience and the brand, the employee brand, the experience in your company, and evangelize that for you. That is the employee experience. Attract top talent, hire the stars, onboard them, engage them and build their strengths, perform, drive those expectations, help develop their careers, and help them depart when it's time for them to find their next journey. Let's hear a little bit more from Amanda about how she builds this experience at Rewind.
Consulting, I was always asking people, what are your business goals? And it was shocking to me where I would look then at the talent strategy and I couldn't see the business connect. I couldn't see the EVP, the employee value proposition connect. And I'm like, that's why you're struggling, because your programs probably aren't resonating with people and you're spending money where you shouldn't be spending money.
I love how she mentions employee value proposition. Again, connecting it back to the value propositions we create for customers and value propositions that we create for employees, thinking both in our product market fit for our products, but our talent culture fits for our employees. You've got to ask yourself, what would have to be true for my company to get to 10 million, 25 million, 50 million, even 100 million? The team, the people are going to be the driving factor to be able to get there. Amanda Gordon is currently the vice president of people at Rewind, a company with a mission to help business protect their SaaS and cloud data. And she joins us on this episode and goes into some really interesting pieces, talking about human resources and building a star team of employees, starting with three key questions. Why did they join? Why did they stay? And why did they leave? Amanda uses her experience as a senior human resources and business executive. She's hired, engaged, and has grown top talent with over 1,000 hires under her belt, over 20 years in the tech space. She's truly known as an expert in talent management, and we dive into some interesting buckets to understand all the different pieces to talent strategies. Lastly, she shares why she advocates for people to take steps before they think they're ready and why working for small companies isn't actually a step backwards in your career, but a chance to learn. So let's dive in and hear about Amanda's leadership experience and learn more from everything she has to share. Welcome, Amanda. I gotta say, I'm really excited to have you on the show here with us today. Because I know you've done some really cool things. You've done some amazing things. And I want our audience to learn about it. Today it's all about building teams and team building and what that looks like from both a hiring and retaining and attracting, but also the whole process of building teams and the power of teams. And I think you have a lot to say of that. So I'm gonna start with our puzzle, with our big question. Amanda, how do you build teams?
That is a big question. I have to first say that, you know, what's funny is this morning I was having breakfast with my kids and I said, I'm going to be on a podcast. Almost like fell off their chairs laughing. So I love
that. What? Yeah. Are they going to be our top listeners?
They might run in at some point or my dog might bark. But so actually our team, we love puzzles, and we have on our meetings regularly the puzzle of the day, and it's something that I like because it's like that bigger picture challenge of like, yeah, how do you build teams? And I'm passionate about finding great talent, but not only finding great talent, but then how do you make sure that, like, we can find all kinds of resumes, maybe, you know, mm-hmm. 200 that look good on paper, and then you sort them through to maybe 10 that could actually do the job, have the right, you know, compensation expectations, are available, interested in our company. But then how do you find that secret sauce and really build great teams? And there's a gazillion books on it. It's a topic that is kind of that black art. But I go back to for myself of our CEO wrote today an email to all staff because it's Employee Appreciation Day. He said that his philosophy is to find great, passionate people and put them together and unite them on a common goal and let them run. And, you know, I really appreciate that. So I'm a big believer in finding people that need or match what you need right now. It's never a secret ingredient. You know, it's not a cookie cutter ever. I always look at a team and go, what's missing? Is it a diversity thing? Is it a, mm-hmm. is this an extroverted team, an introverted team? What would be that secret to that team? So there's one thing of finding the talent, but then it's growing the talent, retaining the talent, engaging the talent. So all those other layers have to be in there. To me, that's really the secret of a great team.
Yeah, I like that. I like that you've kind of looked at the full cycle of that, right? You've got to attract the right people. Then you've got to choose the right people. Mm-hmm. Then you've got to develop those right people, right? Place them in the right teams. And then you've got to retain them over time. Like there's a full employee cycle here that is a big part of building great teams.
Huge. And, you know, you'll see this a lot in industry of employee value propositions. Mm-hmm. And I dig deep on employee value proposition. So employee value proposition to me is the same as a customer value proposition. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, why did they join us? Why do they stay? And why do they leave? And if you map out the employee journey with a lens, like hardcore, be analytical, be real, don't sugarcoat it, like really real on why do they join? Uh-huh. Why do they stay? Why do they leave? You can then build programs that fit your company, and you can build teams that really get it, like it fits. And I think you can only do that if you leave your personal bias, your personal views aside, and you go hardcore into like, let's really figure this out. And that's where the cool stuff happens.
I love that. That's so clippable too, you know? So wait a minute, three questions that can really help drive and like to strip away everything. I like that. Why do they join? Why do they stay? Why do they leave? That's so powerful how you've distilled that. I like that. So to kind of pause this puzzle for a second, Amanda, I'd love to hear your journey. So you've got this wealth of experience, these insights, and the fact that you can take these complex ideas and simplify them to these three questions, I think already shows kind of the experience that you have, because you can simplify it. And I really love that. But I'd love to kind of take us back. Who is Amanda? Where is Amanda from? Where'd you grow up? Let's start with a little bit of, you know, let's start there. And how did we get to here? So let's go through a little bit of that life story.
So I recently joined Rewind and love this company. I'll talk about it later. In joining Rewind, my first couple of weeks, I had to tell my story over and over again. And I suddenly realized, holy crap, I'm old.
No. Like,
all this experience, but I'm so proud of all that experience. So I go all the way back to born in Ottawa.
Ontario. Yeah, local Ottawan.
Yeah, sat on a porch on Powell Avenue and used to wave at people and say, "Hi, Amanda, I'm free." All the way through to, my parents actually moved to Perth, Lanark area, when I was younger, and I went to high school in Perth and had a great childhood, a really great family, and just people that propped me up and supported me and taught me to dream big. Went to university in Guelph and studied business and economics and math. And, you know, my passion was math. And I remember coming out of school and my dad, I said to him, I don't want to be an accountant. I don't want to do math. And I got an offer right away to do human resources. And I didn't even know what human resources meant. I did a lot of recruiting. And my dad said to me at that stage that there are two streams on the people side. One is very strategic, and he had had a phenomenal mentor in his career that was their HR prime, and was very strategic. And the other side is very administrative. And he said, if it's an administrative role, run screaming, it's not your fit. If it's a strategic role, run in the building and say, pick me. And so that is, you know, where my career began on, you know, leaning in on the people side.
Let's get back to what you were telling me a little bit of that story. So you got placed into a human resources role. Is that kind of, or sorry, that was the bit I was on.
So I think where we got cut off is I said that I remember reaching out to my dad and I said, I don't even know what human resources means, what it is. And his response to me was that he'd had an incredible mentor in his career. And he said that there's two streams of HR and people. And one of them is very strategic and it's a critical piece of a business. And the other is more administrative. And I'm not criticizing either. But he said to me that you are 100% in the strategic stream. And if you can find a role like that, run screaming into the building. And so my early part of my career was in people roles, recruitment, always in tech. And I grew up in just a phenomenal industry that was exploding. And so had really just like, I still pinch myself of some of the career opportunities I had. So from small, tiny little startups where started from the bottom, now we're here, through large multinationals that gave me that global perspective. There's nothing like working on global compensation for Asia Pacific to really figure out, you know, what does compensation really mean? How do you make it strategic? And then through to working at, sorry, I have a little tickle. Some smaller companies, which is my sweet spot, and helping them grow. One company, I was there for 11 years, and we grew it to eventually being acquired. And one of my career highlights of from that very early stage through to seeing it grow to an $80 million, $200 million company. And then
what company that was?
Yeah. That company was called Skywave. And just a ton of lessons learned for me during that stage of my career. Then I started consulting when we I actually had an opportunity to do consulting, which was a phenomenal experience because I thought I'd learned a ton at Skywave, but when you have to go into different companies and walk in the door and try to make a quick assessment of, is this a beanbag culture? Is this a cubicles to the ceiling culture? And really lean in and help them. Mm-hmm. I worked with about 30 different tech companies at that stage and cleaned compensation, cleaned stock options, coached executives, fixed whatever was broken. And certainly that gave me just an incredible learning experience. Then I moved into, I'll fast forward really quick. I moved into
executive. It's all good. I'm loving every part of this. Don't feel you need to fast forward. Right. This is music to my ears, Amanda. I share a lot of the same interests. So I like hearing about this.
So as I was doing the consulting, I joined a board. And that board is part of Canada North Tech Park. Mm-hmm. And it's called the Canada North Business Association. And they are passionately looking at how do we support Canada's largest tech park to be able to attract top talent and make more companies successful. For perspective, there's about 540 different tech companies in Canada. Mm. And to be able to look at it from that bigger picture of how do we really pull in talent, like at an extreme level to support this community to be able to have more success stories. That became my passion. And so I joined Boyden, which is an executive search firm, to be able to lean in really, really hard on executive search and pull talent into our tech communities full time. I can't say enough about Boyden. And if just to give you perspective, they work on about 600 executive searches a year in Canada. Wow. So, you know, this is big leagues. And when you're placing a CEO, a CFO, a VP product into a company, you know, these are game changing roles. So we talked earlier about, you know, how do you build a great team? I became like just obsessed about perfecting my craft in that space and saw so many different placements where I left and I'd go home and go, like, I think I really helped that company today. And I'm really cool. Proud of what we just did. So like high fives to the team and we'd see that person accept their role. But what I was missing was I wasn't at the table building the company. I would place these phenomenal people. And then I was like, okay, go do amazing things, check in on them. But I'm like, oh, how are you doing? And they tell me about their struggles and I would be talking to them about it. And so I had multiple calls. There were lots, you know, this is a very hot market. And so I had a call from a company called Rewind. A nice person called me and told me all kinds of great things. And this was the first time that a company actually really resonated with me, because early stages, they had just raised $80 million in funding. They were doing a pivot of their business, and it was really go time to really build this. And they've been, if you read in the press about them, they're labeled a unicorn, and doing just phenomenal things, and a all-star team. So I thought, I want to check that box again. I really miss building. And so November said yes, and here I am.
And here you are. What a journey, Amanda. That is really really quite a journey. And a few key points that I'd like to kind of maybe take us back to and kind of explore. So you started some of your days in kind of some recruitment stuff, right? As many people in the people and culture space kind of start with some recruitment. And till today, you do a certain level of recruitment. And what I'd like to kind of position the views is, what was Amanda thinking during her first recruitment days of like, how do I recruit people, to the transformation of how does Amanda think today? So I kind of want to see the differences that in that journey for recruitment specifically, maybe as a first start.
So early stages, it was, we have 30 positions we have to fill. And so I remember thinking that the only way I'm really going to impress this team of engineers that I'm working with is to be able to, like at the start, they would screen everything I did. They would screen every candidate that I would recommend. They were wasting their time because I could easily say to them, no, 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 here's a yes, no, 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 here's a yes. And so I realized quickly that I have to lean in and make sure that anybody I recommend really is a yes, so that we can start to build trust. And the only way I could ever get there was by having some pretty deep conversations with them about, what do you really need? Like, let's talk about that profile. And it's not just a C++, whatever. Like, what will make you say yes? And so I would passionately screen candidates and try to find that right fit for our teams. And once I've always told people when I'm mentoring or when I'm working with them early in their career, that don't take recruitment for granted. Like, really lean in with managers, and if you can hire some stars for them, they start to really open up a trust with you, and they'll ask you about how to onboard that star, and they'll ask you how to really retain talent. They'll come to you with different things. And I think what I also started to realize early in my career, and I would say, I perfect my craft, I've really looked at that now, is that the relationship you make with a candidate is lasting. In a lot of cases, those candidates will invite me to their barbecue, to their children's weddings, to their to their baby showers, because they will come to you and say, like, you took a chance on me, and we form a relationship that is very different. And you coach candidates through that process and form like really good relationships with them. So all those lessons learned to say, like, being real and caring about the candidate experience. And I would never oversell. I learned that later in life. Never oversell an opportunity, because the candidate will land and then they'll run screaming out of the building. So those are all the...
And you're saying you learned that the hard way?
Well, you learn that even from being, just seeing a candidate not connecting, not really fitting. And that's the hard way, because then you have to go back to what happened. And certainly if I look now, when I'm working with teams, when I'm recruiting executive talent, I spend a lot of time with candidates right up front saying, here's the deal. When I was doing executive search, I remember talking to candidates and saying, this team is a gong show. Like, you're walking into a team that needs you. It's not clean. If you're up for something that's like really exciting and meaty and challenging, this is a great role. If you're looking for a coasting role, big established, you know, they need a leader, but it's not like roll up your sleeves and dig deep, then I'll find that fit for you. So, you know, all those big lessons learned to get you to a spot where you realize that it's not about shoving a round peg in a square hole. It's about being okay to say no to somebody, and it's okay, I got you, I'll keep looking for you. But you're not the right fit for this one, and that's an okay thing. I'm saving you worry and me time and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I love that. I think it's so relevant, yet so challenging, especially in today's talent market, right? It is excruciatingly difficult right now in this talent market to land some of the people. And maybe I'm saying excruciatingly difficult. Maybe your experience is different. I don't want to put those words in your mouth. But, you know, more and more employers are struggling with finding the right people. So they feel like they need to be selling. They need to be kind of pushing. How do you balance that? You're hiring right now at Rewind.
Oh, yeah.
You know how difficult it is to find good people with the talent market the way it is, costs rising with it, and kind of borders really blurring because you're hiring from all over. How do you balance that with the long-term good that you know of? Don't push a candidate into a position that might not be good because you pay for it in the long run. How are we balancing that?
Yeah. So my puppy just came in with his toy. So if you hear some noises, it's my puppy, not my tummy. You are 100% right. And I think of some recruitment we're doing right now in Denmark and Poland, and we have a couple of candidates that have been brought forward. And it's not only, oh my gosh, we need to find talent for that region, but compensation is insane right now, where we're seeing candidates that are saying, sure, I'll join you, but I want a US salary, or I want, you know, something that's completely out of market. And I challenge my team regularly to say that we have to stay true to Rewind's cultures at the end of the day. Like, we have to. And so our culture is to, you know, respect diversity, equity, inclusion, to really make sure that what we do for one, we'll do for others. And I don't want two people in a role that have completely different salaries because somebody is a better negotiator. Like, that's not how we roll. And so I say that because you layer on the need for talent. You know, some of these roles are business critical, and talent is in, you know, is in demand these days. So it is really tricky. And so I go back to working with our TAs, our whole TA team, to say that make sure that you're creating that experience and you're respecting the experience with the candidate. You're listening to them. Don't spend a lot of time with somebody that is, you know, clearly they're saying, I want this and we can only offer that. Don't try to fit that square peg in the round hole. But when you find great talent, it's a noisy market of everybody saying, we've got a great culture, we're an employer of choice. I believe that Rewind actually has some secret sauce. I would not have come here if I didn't believe that. And so I'm trying to really help them to tell that story that's real. And it'll resonate with some, and others, it's okay if they run screaming away. I'll actually happily recommend them to other companies.
There you go. That's awesome. That's I really like how you tied it back to our core values. And I think, you know, many companies will come up with core values or vision or mission, you know, do a little exercise, put them on the wall, and yay, they exist, right? Like, but in this case, what you're saying is, well, no, our hiring process has to follow some of these core values. How are we staying true to them and really pushing against the current challenges and trends of what's being demanded, but staying true to those? I think that's really powerful. Thank you for sharing.
That's another part of screening. Like, if core values don't matter to you, that's okay. Find a company where it doesn't matter. If core values matter to you, then appreciate what this company's core values are. And for us, it is a critical piece, because we want to grow a beautiful, great company. And even when you you hear our CEO speak, but you can ask anybody and they'll talk to you about core values and it matters. And again, it's okay if core values don't matter to you, then you should find a different company, because here we're going to push you on them regularly. Yeah. So, yeah.
I like that. Okay. So we went back to Amanda's little recruitment days kind of early on and shown kind of the transformation of that. Take me back to SkyWave. And kind of share with me because 11 years and you the company sells, so you really go through stages and ages of people and culture at a company, because you know what you can do maybe with a company that's been around for 15 years in regards to people and culture might be different than the startup that's got 20 or 30 people, kind of what they're looking at. So maybe give me an insight as to how did some of your role change, and how did the people and culture role change throughout SkyWave through the kind of decade that you were with them?
It's crazy. It's crazy. And even to think that I was there for 11 years is like, what? I never, ever, especially at that stage of my career, I never would have guessed that I would have stayed at a company that long, but it wasn't the same company. And every couple of years it was changing and our challenges were so different than they were before. I walked into SkyWave with three little babies. When the CEO interviewed me, he interviewed me in my house
and
it was nap time for the babies. I had to give my dog to the neighbors because I knew he was going to ring the doorbell, dog was going to bark, babies were going to wake up. So I was like, thinking I could interview in my house with a CEO about a job with three sleeping babies was crazy. But
you did it. You did it. And they were, I mean, that's ahead of their time for being so open to that, right? Like, I mean, maybe today we're a lot more open to that, but that's pretty, that kind of is telling a bit of the culture there, the openness for that.
Huge. And I said to him that if we're going to work together, you need to respect that, you know, supper time, bath time, like I'm the real deal. After that, I'm okay. But during that, you know, I have protected hours and, you know, come sneak in and look at my babies. And so from early stages, like walking into SkyWave, I remember that in the early stages, we used to joke and say, you know, one of the first things they told me was, oh, I'm not sure if we can make payroll this month. I'm like, okay, this is going to be fun. Through to what would have to be true for us to get to 10 million.
Wow.
And really digging deep into that philosophy, what would have to be true to get to 25 million, to 50 million, to 100 million. And I saw our whole team, especially our executive team, evolve and grow. And I remember at this early stages, our CEO, his name is Stanley. Stanley would say things like, strategy doesn't matter. It's what will our customers buy? What do they need? Like, we just have to get revenue, get it going, get it solid. And then we can be more strategic on our 3-year, 5-year plan. We would debate that with him a lot, of course. But he was very real on to get to 5 million, to get to 10 million, we needed to really get tight with certain markets, certain customers. And then to get to 25 to 50, what would have to be true. And a lot of those stages, if you look at even our org design, completely different for what does a company look like at 5 million to 10 million, 25 million. And so we had to be very strategic about our growth. If I look at even 25 million, it was a time where we shifted gears to look internally at our systems and how we work, to really make sure that we could keep up with what we wanted, where we wanted to go and what we saw coming at us. Each stage had very different requirements to make it to the next stage. And if you don't do that, if you just keep growing without stopping and being very real about what does the talent look like that we need for that next stage? What are we missing that if we don't start building it now, we're not going to make it to the next stage? Then I think you grow by accident versus really you know, pulling in what you need now, building it now so that you're able to do even be even better and stronger there. A great example is an OD project that that we worked on. We worked on OD1, OD2, OD3, OD4, and And if I think back to that, one of the first stories that I love is we had somebody that was in manufacturing, and if he watches it, he'll laugh because we needed somebody in customer support and to run the customer support organization. And I remember having a conversation with him saying, we'd really like you to leave your role and to move into customer support. And he was like, are you going to fire me? Like, what are you going to do? And we're like, no, you're a phenomenal manager. You understand our product. You understand when it breaks, how long it takes to fix it. Mm. And we'd love you to be able to really help clean up the customer support organization in terms of building the right structure and supporting that team to scale to what we needed next. And he went over to the role and he was phenomenal. He was looking at best practices globally of how do you really create like a world-class customer support organization. And then when his assignment was over, this is part of building our future leaders, I said, okay, you know, you can go back to manufacturing. He's like, I don't want to go back to manufacturing. And we're like, we're, you know, completely supportive of where you want to go. So I just tell that story because I think it was such an important lesson in our organization, and so many other people then started raising their hand to say, yeah, pick me. And we could see in our organization, we needed a lot more people in engineering that appreciated our customers and really got why our customers buy our products and what their needs are. And that shift only came from putting a lot more people in engineering into customer facing roles, pre-sales, even competitive intelligence, and allowing them to get away from building the next step of our technology through to, holy crap, we've got to do like some big steps if we really want to deliver what our customers need. And so that's where we saw the company take off in very different ways.
Yeah. I really love that, Amanda. I really love the question you use. What would have to be true for us to get to? What would have to be true? I think that's such a powerful kind of piece for our audience to kind of think about. What would have to be true for you to get 10 million, for you to build the team that you want to mount and kind of breaking some of that down? I really like that question. And then I'd love to pick on, you mentioned that part of the assignment was around your building the future leaders of the team. Tell me about that. Tell me that it was a formal program around building future leaders in SkyWave. Was it kind of ad hoc? How was that?
So I would say the seed was planted at SkyWave for really respecting that we had a management team that needed support. I'm going to lose my voice. As we were scaling, we didn't want to always be hiring externally. We really wanted those employees to come on the journey with us. And so we started to build more management chops within our organization. And what you start to see when your business is scaling is it's not just a management layer, it's a leadership level that you need. And so we looked at future leaders. But I would say to you where I saw this most and worked in it most was with consulting. And going into companies and looking at where they were struggling, and often it was management layers. And so did this for multiple clients where we designed a management development program for them. And then we would challenge them on the future leaders program. And so even at Rewind, I had a conversation with a member of my team just yesterday talking about, we have an assignment. It's kind of like a puzzle for our company. And I said, what if we made that an assignment for one or a couple of our future leaders? Like pull people out of their day jobs on a cross-functional puzzle and allow them to dig deep into coming up with suggestions and solutions for our executive team, as well as giving them training and development in what does it really mean to be a leader, but giving them real life, real world, real company problems that are outside of their domain so that they understand finance better, they understand our customer better, they understand, you know, whatever it is, that they are given the exposure of the business side of our business.
Yeah, I really like that. I really like how you framed it. We've got a puzzle, and can we assign some future leaders to this puzzle? You know, kind of look at some of these problems as little puzzles, bring a cross-functional team, You know, areas that you know you could backfill fairly well, but you can't necessarily put new people on this puzzle because it requires an intimate knowledge of, you know, the business and the customer and so on and so forth.
Or you do bring somebody in that you want to stretch them and they're new and to see the business. And I, with future leaders, we don't pull them out of their current role typically.
Okay.
Often it's an assignment. Like I think of Kinaxis, which is a beautiful company in Ottawa.
Yeah.
Big shout out and props to Kinaxis. And I know John Sicard, who's the CEO, used to do that with his team where he'd have, you know, what's keeping John up at night. And he would pull together a cross-functional team to help solve one of John's puzzles. And the opportunity for employees to really dig deep with a CEO on whatever it is. It could be launching a new product into a different region of the world and, you know, what would have to be true for us to get $1 of revenue. Or it could be we're having a hard time hiring people in Poland. What would have to be true for that to, you know, for us to break that puzzle? So I think it's, we've got such bright people in our organizations. And just because somebody hasn't done something before, that, you know, I'm a fan of even better, fresh eyes, and they'll learn, and we'll all learn from hearing a different perspective. So yeah, it's, the growth is incredible. I highly recommend it.
I love that. So we've kind of entered the consulting stage of your time there, and you said that one of the big problems that you saw in companies was this management layer. What other were kind of key indicators for you of like, ooh, this is a red flag, this is a yellow flag for our listeners here? Kind of put your consulting hat on, and you know, for them to do an assessment of their own kind of companies. What are things that you would look for, little signs that said, oh, maybe this area needed help, that area needed help? Yeah, a mental model you used when you went in and did these assessments?
Especially in high growth companies, what I saw and I still see regularly is the congratulations, you're a manager. Good luck. And yep. Everybody's so keen and everybody is like, woohoo, you know, you're a natural manager, go do it, good luck, and we want you to do now, you know, your one-on-ones every week, and we want you to do your feedback for your employees every month, and we want you to deliver and engage and inspire and knock it out of the park. Good luck. I think it's that, for me, is a red flag. And I think it's also a red flag for me is something that's just the same for everyone. Because in my journey, I've learned that we really need to have conversations with people, and you never know what somebody needs until you ask. And sometimes it can be, oh my gosh, I'm terrified. I don't know how to be a manager. Can you help me with feedback? I have to have a difficult conversation. I don't like to have difficult conversations. And so like if you spent time with me and saw in my day, the challenges that I work on, Rewind is still fresh. So yes. I'm just building that. But I think of even Skywave of it would be with the CEO talking about a conversation that they had to have and making sure that they framed it right, that they had all the information and that I would play devil's advocate with them, through to a brand new manager who's just terrified. And I did a lot of 360s. And what I learned in delivering 360s is I'm really comfortable in saying to somebody, you're amazing at this, but boy, oh boy, do you ever suck at this? That's okay. What do you want to do with that? Like, does that impact you? Does that matter? And they could say no. And I, through a 360, I could say, yeah, it does. And so let's figure out a way to work through that. But back to your question of red flags, I think it really isn't money often, it's time. And it's knowing how to support managers, like what, like, you know, there's no magic program out there. No. And so I think it's where I see a lot of the struggles is really helping managers to be better managers.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's awesome. And I love that. I'm smiling ear to ear because, you know, it's not like you're putting a plug in for Unicorn Labs, but you know what, that's exactly what we've started to do and we've done for a number of years now. We work with companies who've been like, yeah, we have these 20 managers that have never received any training and we thought they were going to be phenomenal, but they're struggling. And it's like, yeah, I, you know, and I think you hit the nail on the head is that a lot of these young managers in high growth startups, right? You hire a whole bunch. The designer who was the best is now the lead designer, right? Managing XY people, haven't ever done that. So let me switch that back to Rewind. Now you're at Rewind. You've had all these experiences. You're building it out. And I'm assuming you're building a bit of a talent strategy. So now you're thinking high-level talent strategy, all these different components. What are components of talent strategy that other VPs of talent, other people who are concerned about the talent in their startups should be thinking about? And I think one key piece we started the episode with, which is, you know, why will people come work with for you? Why will they stay and why are they leaving? I think that's the kind of employee value prop. What are the key parts of a talent strategy we should consider?
So one best piece of advice to anybody is don't join a company in November because you have to report on your last quarter results, your annual results. You have to create your new plan for the next year and also your plan for Q1. So it's like, I have just finished doing, you know, my strategic plan and my talent strategy. And with Rewind, as I would with any company that I was working with before, I broke it down into buckets. And I think it's common to do that, but I'll shout it out because I think it really helps frame it. So join is a bucket. Grow is a bucket. Engage is a bucket. And reward is a bucket. And we also have diversify as a bucket. And I say that because if you look at it, like really go hardcore in those focus areas and think we're on an OKR process. So we're regularly setting our stretch goals. And I look at layering in, we have great feedback tools in our company. And so before I set our new OKRs, I'm going back into like, I've just spent hours and hours reading through and answering all of our Office 5 responses and hearing, you know, what people love and where they're challenging us to do better. And so I think if you put them into those kind of strategic buckets and you challenge yourself on, you know, what is true now and where do we want to be and what would have to be true to get us there. And then layer in what matters to employees, like spend the time. Ask people, why did you join? Why do you stay? Why would you leave? And make sure your programs fit that. That's where it's magic. If you are building a talent strategy that's based on a sample you saw online or a great book you've read, you will not match what your business needs. And so I think whenever I'm doing any kind of talent strategy or when I was consulting, I was always asking people, what are your business goals? And it was shocking to me where I would look then at the talent strategy and I couldn't see the business connect. I couldn't see the EVP, the employee value proposition connect. And I'm like, that's why you're struggling because your programs probably aren't resonating with people and you're spending money where you shouldn't be spending money. So, you know, to me, it's all about that grind, which creates a beautiful plan, which fits a company.
That is awesome. I love that. I love those buckets. I wrote those down because I think those really help. But I think the ultimate message there, in addition to the bucket, was that does the talent strategy actually align with the business goals? Because there's gotta be that connection. Otherwise, you're just, you know, just listen. Yeah, I mean, even you said listen to your staff, listen to your employees. What do they want? What do they want to continue to join and to stay? Right, and I think Netflix.
That's where it works. Yeah, that's where it works. Yeah. When you like hardcore, what does our business need this year? What does our business need in 5 years? What are we building today that's going to make sure we hit what the business needs coming at us? Not just what we need this quarter, but like really looking at that bigger level. And that's where your leadership development, your management, your don't know, just strategic hires, I'm losing my voice, really starts to click.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I think that's phenomenal. So Amanda, I could keep talking to you all day. I've got so many thoughts. I love everything you've shared so far, your experience, everything you have. But I'm gonna give you our last question of this episode. But hopefully we'll have you back to unpack some more of these stuff. I'd love to do some stuff on the learning culture piece. What do we do for learning? Even some stuff on compensation. I think you could do a whole how-to masterclass, Amanda, with your experience, and I think that would be really, really awesome to share. But I'll leave you with more of a personal question. You know, what advice would you tell your younger self? Maybe there's a younger VP of talent who's at a small company that they're growing, or they're the first HR hire for a team, and they're kind of, you know, younger self, but also in that role where they're working with startups and they're trying to figure it out. What's your advice, both personally and professionally?
So I think it took me a long time to realize to just be you, be real. You know, I talked about being real with candidates and tell them the real story. And if they run screaming out of the building, it's okay. And if they run screaming in, then really focus on that. But that only comes from open, courageous conversations and understanding the business. So, you know, I would tell my younger self to maybe spend more time trying to figure out that part than the okay, C++ and da 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 da. You know, Ruby, whatever we're looking for, I can find you 100 of those. But I, you know, to really connect and make a difference is where you layer in, like, really understanding what does this business need and what does this team need, and not looking at each time just a cookie cut of the last one. But back to, you know, being real and being you, I would say that, like, that has been where I've just truly connected with people. And that's where culture also comes from. When it's just a safe environment to just, like, my dog a few minutes ago started snoring at my feet. You know, my younger self probably would have went, oh my gosh, my dog started. Now I'm like, do you want to be my dog? I think that I regularly introduce my kids on screen. And, you know, I think I learned that too with SkyWave, where I knew everybody's dog's names. I knew everybody's kids' names. That's where companies are the ones you want to stay with for a long time. And it just comes from, just being real, being you. I would also tell my younger self that all that hard work will pay off. And being brave and taking steps when you think you're not ready, it's okay. You'll figure it out. And that's where big growth happens. Yes. Like, I could have easily stayed at SkyWave for another 5-10 years, but I think, like, I knew everybody's name, everybody's dog's names. But when I think of the growth I've had since then, it's magic, because I was brave and said, okay, I got this. And I think that we do get scared of really stretching. But stretch is beautiful. And the other advice I would give my younger self is that I had beautiful learning when I went small company, big company, small company, big company. So I would encourage people to do small. Don't be afraid of small. Small is phenomenal if it fits you, because you have to
do everything.
You know, it's up to you to. Yeah, if we say, okay, we need to do executive compensation, it's like, okay, how do we do executive compensation? And then when you go to a big company, I had incredible learning of, like, big, well-oiled machines and how it works, and how do you do things on a global basis, and just a very different learning that just made my toolbox so much bigger when I went to small companies, because then I knew what we could look like and how to start building to that.
I love that. I love that. I really like that last piece of advice. In addition to everything, you know, kind of lead into it, be brave. Amanda, you've left us with many puzzles to unpack, which are fun. You've left us with some key insights. You've left us with some frameworks to think about, some questions to unpack. You've given us some amazing stories, and you've allowed us into your heart and your home, your children, and your soul. And I really appreciate how much you share on this call. Thank you so much for all the wisdom, all the brilliance that you bring to this, and I really appreciate your time being here.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Amanda, for such an amazing episode and so many insights that you kind of threw at us right at the end, more and more and more, and I absolutely loved it. Thank you to each and every one of you for listening all the way through, for tuning in, for being part of our community here at Unicorn Labs in our Unicorn Leaders podcast. It is always a pleasure to have you, and we're so honored for you to listen to our show. So if you've got any questions for me, if you've got any questions for Amanda, we can get it to her. Just send it in either through any of our social medias. You can find me, Fahad Alatab, on Twitter, on LinkedIn, on Instagram, or if you want, email us, Fahad@unicornlabs.ca. We will take all your questions, and maybe even if you've got some guests that you think we should interview on our program, do let us know. But that's it for today. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. You can find the show notes, the transcript at unicornlabs.ca/podcast. If you like the content, be sure to rate it, review it, subscribe to get notified, tell your friends, tell your fellow managers, and I'll leave you with this question to ponder. Do you have a clearly outlined employee journey map? Do you know the experience that your employees go on? Is it intentional, or is it just kind of going along with whatever comes our way? You don't have to make it anything crazy. Just think of 7 different steps. How do I attract them? How do I choose them and hire them? How do I onboard? How do I engage? How do I help them perform? How do I help them develop? And when it's their time to go, how do I help them depart in a great way?